Does the story work?
That's the question, isn't it?
Welcome to the StoryGrid Showrunner podcast, dedicated to answering this question by using the StoryGrid method developed by Sean Coyne. Every season, Randall, Melanie and I, Parul, will analyze a hit TV series to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and why. So we invite you to watch the episodes of Killing Eve Season 3. We're near the end, actually. And so watch it and then tune into the podcast as we discuss what worked, what didn't work, and why. And when this third season is over, which is coming up very soon, we'll have a summary episode where we talk about the six core questions. And we'll be releasing the false cap, so that's the one-page outline. So today we're going to be talking about the sixth episode of Killing Eve Season 3, titled End of Game. And as always, we advise you to watch the TV series before you listen to the following episode, just because we're going to be giving away spoilers. We'll be talking about the global story, and we think it's more valuable for you if you know what we're talking about, because we'll be referencing it a lot. Now, let's get on with the show.
Initial observations.
Oh, yes. Very unexpected. Well, at least the beginning, it was not believable for me. And I even thought that the characters became unreal the further we got into the story or in this episode. What do you think, Randy?
My one word, two word is no way. Parul, what do you got?
I like many of the scenes. I'm glad the investigation's back on track, but I'm worried about the global story.
So what happened in the previous episodes, Randy?
All right. So real quick, it was pretty easy because it was a documentary about rural Russia, as Mel said. Villanelle goes home. Caesar family wins the dung throwing contest at a local fair, which is really important, I think. And they brought it up in this episode, so it must have been important. Oh, yeah. Kills her mom. She may use that skill later on.
Yeah, as a weapon.
So and then she kills her mom and blows up the family's house, gives some money to her brothers and takes off. And that's it. She rides off into the, well, not sunset because it's Russia, but it's like the dreary set. Five commandments per rule for Eve.
Five commandments for Eve. So the inciting incident in this episode is that Nico is alive in the hospital.
Surprise. No way. That's what I said. No way.
Yeah, no, that's quite, it's interesting. The turning point is that Eve, who is trying to work out who killed Nico, actually doesn't believe that it is Villanelle because she discovers a hiccup in the theory that it could be Villanelle. And this is something that both of you actually pointed out in the last episode when I was worried about the fact that Eve might hold this against Villanelle. I think both or one of you said, yeah, but I don't think she'll buy the still got it message.
Yeah.
She does look at that message, still got it, and looks a bit skeptical. But it's also the murder of Krugman, Uther Krugman. Yeah. She looks at the photos of the body and her mind is whirring away. She's discovered that there's something not quite right. So what is Eve's crisis point? Well, it's whether or not she finds and confronts Dasha, because she has been given a photo of Dasha. Now, this is her going to meet one of the KGB's most notorious assassins. So it's going to endanger her if she does do that. But if she doesn't go to Dasha, it's possible that she won't find Nico's attacker. So what's the climax? What does she do? Well, she decides to go to Barcelona, confronts Dasha at a bowling alley. Very classic Killing-y sort of stuff. Do you fancy a game? That's what the first line you say to an assassin. It turns out that Eve can bowl. And Eve ends up, the resolution is that Eve suspects that Villanelle didn't attack Nico. And she notices, in fact, earlier, she notices that Dasha drops the bowling ball when she tells Dasha that her husband didn't die. And the series ends, I think this is relevant as well, that Nico is continuing to ignore her. And we see this in the scene where she's standing outside the hospital bed, outside the room, feeling isolated. Randall.
One thing we want to talk to our listeners about is the crisis has to have stakes, right? There has to be some, you know, a good thing and a bad thing for what she's deciding to do and the two choices and then what she decides to do. And she's weighing that in her head. And she may choose, she may go emotional and choose the thing that's the worst case scenario, or she may, you know, use logic and choose the better of the two choices. And you said the stakes well, you know, but even more than that. So if she goes after Dasha, she's doing exactly what Nico left her for. She's pursuing this, even though she's trying to find Nico's killer. Nico knows that he got hurt because of her. So if she continues to pursue this, she's probably going to lose Nico. But That's a really good point. She may discover, you know, who hurt him, and she doesn't believe it's Villanelle, and then she may be able to stop any further attacks if there's potential attacks. But if she doesn't go because she's trying to win Nico back and she's trying to change and show him she changed, then they're still at risk. So those are the two choices she's got through her head. And because she's Eve, and one thing I really liked about this episode, and there wasn't a whole lot I did like, but the one thing I did like is, you know, Eve's back. She's in investigative mode. She's not wearing sweats, exactly, living on a couch, you know, eating exactly someone's Cocoa Puffs. And she put two and two together pretty fast. The whole bitter pill people are like, Villanelle did this, rah, rah, rah. And she's like, you know, I don't know. She could have been somewhere else.
And that's her superpower, is she's not, you know, she's not the most obvious choice for an agent. But she has a really smart mind and can pick out things that others can't see.
Yep.
Absolutely right. It's wonderful to have her back. It's interesting to compare this to season one, where, you know, a lot of the crisis points were about almost fun. It was like, should I go after this? Especially like, for example, when she first finds out it's a female assassin, she's now put herself in a position. I say she's also the 12's fault. She's now in a position where it's, the stakes are a lot higher if you compare it to season one. It's so personal now, which actually is a classic trope of a thriller, that it becomes personal. And this has continued to be very, very personal to her.
It's really interesting that the first season, one of the first crisis questions in the stakes were very similar to this, but it was less emotional. It was all physical violence. You know, hey, do I do what I want? Do I do what I think I was made to do and lead this, you know, task force to find this female assassin that I figured out, that no one else could figure out, that I'm the only person who can do this? Because she's a little arrogant about this, and ultimately. And if I do that, am I endangering my family? She doesn't even really think about that until the assassin uses her name. And even then, she doesn't really think about it. She does that. That's the whole point of the morality.
Right.
That, yeah, Mel went into, is that's why we've gotten where we are, is because she made those decisions, and that's the kind of person she is. And now three seasons later, we're at this point where she's going to lose her husband because she's going to continue to make the same decisions, but there's just more at stake.
Yes, and she's continued to be punished for everything she does.
And if you strip her back, so if you think about across all the seasons, and we've stripped away everything that she ever had, the comfortable home, the husband, some sort of degree of normality, and sort of, you know, she now has kills under her belt, which she never wanted. You get the essence of her. You know, we talk about the object of desire. Her object of desire has been boiled down to wanting justice, obviously for very personal reasons, but also wanting to save lives, even if it is just her own and Nico's. And yep, this is the essence of who she is, which I think is a really interesting point when you're doing multiple books across, multiple books or a series.
In a series.
Yeah, just a shift, you know, uncovering the truth of that protagonist.
And building on that. So if nothing else, they've done a good job building up to this point. It wouldn't be the way I would have done it, and it's not super compelling sometimes. But when we look back on it, where we're at with Eve, They've done a good job building to this point. There's just some lags.
Yeah.
All right, Mel, Five Commandments of Villanelle.
Yeah, okay, let's start with the inciting incident. Villanelle meets the woman called Helen, who works for the 12th. I don't know which position, but she has power. And she tells Villanelle that she's been approved and she is now a keeper. And Villanelle is completely happy about this until she gets her first job, and Villanelle is expecting that she can give commands now, but she's getting a postcard again, and which is showing her whom she has to kill now. And she only has moved up because it's a high politician guy.
Where?
Huh?
Where?
In Romania.
In Romania.
Yes. Yes. He's in Romania. So,
which is interesting because
I'm living there.
Yeah, I just thought you should point it out. Okay. They'd be like, yeah, what is this American like Romania?
Some more information. We're on a Zoom call, video call, and Randy's background is San Francisco. So there you go, Romania. Okay, so now Villanelle just found out, okay, position of the keeper is not what she was promised or what she was expecting. So the crisis now is for Villanelle. Does she continue to kill and live a good life with all her great apartments and the money? Or does she turn the job down? And she decides that she approaches Constantine, actually, and she wants to leave with him. She wants to leave the 12 and leave everything behind. And she's still doing the kill because Constantine told her that she has to keep her shit together and just continued working so that the 12 do not expect anything that she might want once out, that she might want to get out. So Eve Villanelle is doing the kill in Romania, but she gets stabbed because she was sloppy, and she admits to Dasha that she wants out, the one thing that she was not supposed to do.
Yeah, that was, I was actually quite scared when she did that. I wondered if she'd kept thinking, is Dasha going to hurt her? She says that. So the thing that I wanted to add to this, because I think that's great, Mel, thank you, is that we also have quite a few scenes with Carolyn and Constantine. And I was just thinking to myself, well, okay, so we're tracking the five commandments for Eve and Villanelle because they're the main protagonists. Obviously, it's quite unusual that Villanelle is the main protagonist, but as we know, she's a very likable villain.
She's the thunder.
She is the thunder. That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. And so Carolyn and Constantine, they have progressions in their storyline because Carolyn actually finds out that her son who died, whose name suddenly escapes me, Kenny. Had called Constantine the day before. And so Carolyn threatens Constantine in the car, tries to work out why they've spoken to each other, and that we see that there are complications in MI6. Carolyn doesn't trust Paul because he pretended that he didn't have the phone records, even though she knows that he should have got them. And we find out that Paul has got some sort of suspicious behavior going on because he shows up in Constantine's apartment asking him about the stolen money. So the way I see it is that both Constantine and Caroline's storylines are progressive complications for Eve and Villanelle because they actually complicate what they're trying to get. So this is also a chance for us to see what the 12 are up to. It's the closest we get to truly understanding the 12 is Paul. Randall.
So I just want to go back to the five commandments of Villanelle because I think it's a very, as much as I like this episode better than most, but it wasn't my favorite episode of all the seasons, obviously. But I think it's a very good example of the way a crisis question is really compelling. So the crisis question is, you know, does she take the job as the keeper and this upper level kill job and keep all the money, as Mel said, or does she turn the job down? And by turning the job down, that can mean that she quit the 12, which isn't, I think, what the viewers think at that moment. But when the climax is, she goes to Constantine to get out of the 12, that's something that maybe is not so apparent to the viewer. So it's unexpected, right? So that's a good way to do a crisis where you give them two choices with really bad stakes, because the stakes here are, does she continue to kill and lead a good life, but she's tired of the killing, apparently. That's what we're getting the feeling for. Or does she not do the job and then endanger herself because she's not doing the 12's bidding? You know, those are kind of her two choices, and there's really obvious bad stakes on both sides. But then she goes back to Constantine and says, I want out. I want to go away with you. You had a plan. I turned you down. Now I want to go out. That's maybe something unexpected, and maybe it's not as strong as in some other things I've seen before, or even Killing Eve first season, but it's still a great way to write a crisis. If the author, the screenwriter, can build a really good crisis scene, and then whatever the climax is, whatever the decision is, something super unexpected happens. She makes a decision, and that decision makes her character. Because we always say that the crisis decision is what builds the character, what makes the viewer or the reader understand the character better.
Right, so you mean the fact that she went to Constantine and therefore is vulnerable with him? Is that the bit that you're pointing out as unexpected?
Yeah, I think that that's just not what a viewer at the end of that scene where like she's like, this is bullshit, you know, and then
you don't expect that's what she does.
So as a viewer, you're like, well, so did she turn him down? Does she go back and be a grunt, or does she take the job and do it? That's kind of like what we're thinking at that moment. And the next scene is she's at the hockey game, you know, schmoozing up to Constantine, and you're like, oh, I didn't really see that coming. I mean, I didn't see that coming, but there's a lot stronger versions of this in the first season and in a lot of other great TV series and movies and books. But that's the making of a good crisis question. You give them hard questions with big stakes, because this is life or death stakes. If she turns the 12 down or she accepts it, either way, they're risking her life. You give them hard questions with big stakes, and then she makes a decision. And then something happens, or some little turn of events turns the whole thing up, and it doesn't really matter
Unexpected is great. I think the only problem I have with this turning to Constantine is if both Constantine and Villanelle want to leave the 12, who do we have left? Just Dasha? Like bowling Dasha?
Dasha, Paul, and the girl, and the lady, Helen.
Paul is frightening because he said very little. Helen spoke to her child on the phone and didn't seem as frightening to me as she, I mean, maybe she has some sort of hidden danger and craziness to her. But I struggled that the two of them, Constantine was, I'm looking for a bad guy. I'm looking for a villain to be scared of.
Right.
Which, you know, something we'll come to actually in a moment. Because that leads us to the question of, well, what makes a good thriller? And as you know, if you're a StoryGrid follower, you'll know that there are obligatory scenes and conventions. And in each of these episodes, what we tend to do, rather than pick out all of them, because the chances are they wouldn't hit all of them, we'll pick out ones that we think are relevant for this episode. Randall, do you want to kick us off on the thriller conventions?
I feel like a broken record. We're always talking about the speech and the praise of the villain, but I'm going to put a little twist on it here, right? From the beginning of the series, but especially this season, we've said, you know, someone killed Kenny. He was looking for the 12. It's obviously the 12. We haven't seen the assassin that killed Kenny. We really haven't seen a lot of 12. We saw Helen. We know Paul's part of it, but really we're getting less scared of the 12. And we're going to get into how we could have made this better later and how I think they should have incorporated the 12 a little bit more to make it more compelling. You know, at this point, we have one possible assassin, which could be Dasha, and maybe she killed Kenny. But really, you know, you just don't have this speech in the praise of the villain. We don't even know who the villain is of this series, and it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, all that money that was lying around the bank account, obviously it's a lot of money, $6 million. What was it for? I don't quite understand, and I don't really understand what to focus on when it comes to 12.
Right.
And I thought that Helen would have bared her teeth for us at some point, but she didn't.
So we got two more episodes. We expect to see a hero at the mercy of the villain, but we don't know who the villain is. You know, I don't know if Villanelle is a big enough villain for Eve in this episode. They showed up once on the bus and she wasn't even threatening her. It's like, I'm not even here for you. And that was it. And there's totally,
and she's not the master villain though.
No, and so, well, we don't even know who the villain is that she'll be at the mercy of if that happens. Go ahead.
Just one thing is for me is that the thing that I don't find credible yet, maybe it'll change, is that Eve is clearly a bee in their bonnet. Like, she annoys them. She shows up unannounced, finds Dasha in Barcelona. She's no longer affiliated with MI6, so why don't they just kill her? They kill loads of people.
Yeah. There's supposed to be a false ending at some point. You know, they always do that so far, every series they've done a kind of a false ending where either Eve died almost or Villanelle almost died. Yeah. You know, what's the false ending going to be this time?
Nico,
you know,
it's kind of over. Died.
Nico almost died.
Yeah. So this, the false ending for this, you know, both of them almost die. they shoot each other and they both die. And then the next season they're not. I mean, people are popping up all over the place that should be dead, like Nico. There's no clock. There's no MacGuffin. There's no MacGuffin. There's no tension. There's no MacGuffin because we don't have a villain, so we don't know what their MacGuffin is. Mm. So at this point, you know, as a viewer, do I care what's going on? Because I don't feel like I do.
What pulls us through, though, because I do still, obviously we've been pulling apart all these episodes. I still enjoy watching it because the characters are phenomenal. In and of themselves, they're quite unique. Villanelle is still a wonderful character.
I agree. So quirky. Yeah.
So crazy.
Morality genre. Mel, go keep going.
I'll keep going. Okay. So we've waited one entire episode of a documentary about Russia, wanting to see how Eve will deal with her loss, because we all suspected that Nico was dead, but he's still alive. So how is that possible? He was pitchforked in the throat and Eve didn't go and help him. She just collapsed. And added to that, they were somewhere in Poland and I don't know how remote, and they could still save Nico. Absolutely no idea how they did this. So let's look at Eve's morality story. So maybe that was not Eve's all is lost moment as we suspected, because Nico is not dead. So that moment, if she would hit the all is lost moment, that would mean she could either stay in the mess she's in or change her approach and her thinking to climb out of the mess again. But now Nico is still alive. So Eve falls back into her old self. And Eve should have been much more aware of her threat that her work poses on Nico. And even that she couldn't know that Nico would be in danger, she still could have shown more empathy for his situation. But she falls back to doing the first thing she's used to. She wants to investigate, even though she knows that's the reason, exactly the reason, why everything happened and why Nico wants her to piss off, as he told her in the Stephen Hawking voice. So I think she hasn't learned anything from it all. She just keeps following her wand, which is investigating and not paying attention to what's so close in front of her, that she is losing Nico for good. And even if he's not dead yet, then he soon will be. So probably.
Can I just add a thought to that? Because yeah. It's really interesting to hear you talk about the morality genre. And as you were talking, I was thinking, actually, that's quite true of a lot of sort of investigative detective work. Some of these characters are good at their investigations, but terrible in their personal lives. And that's like a common trait. And one of the things that, you know, when I work with writers, or I'm sure when any of us work with writers, we, particularly in this genre, we talk about traits. You know, who is your character? What traits do they have? How do they ruin their life alongside succeeding in investigations? And this is a really great example of someone who's destroying her life.
Yeah, but she has to come around at some point. At the moment, I think it's still this morality punishment story, because she's going to be kept being punished if she doesn't like change her approach. And
but see, here's the thing. If she never actually redeems herself from a morality point of view, but she solves the investigation and she captures the 12, we will to some degree forgive her anything. So if she saves tons of lives and actually justice is served, we will forgive her. She will suffer from that. But as a reader, a watcher, we might still enjoy it.
That's the higher good. If she is actually able to stop the 12. That's right. But in order for that, in a morality story, the protagonist has to sacrifice their own self, their own good. And we don't know on which level it's going to be. Is it just going to be Nico, or is it going to be her life as well? Because we have a thriller and it's life and death stakes.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's really good.
What do you think about the global story, Randy?
So we talked a little bit about this. So the middle build is supposed to be all about the villain, because your hero is only as good as the villain that he or she is facing.
Yes.
So if Villanelle is the villain, which we don't really think is, it looks less and less, and she doesn't have the teeth. I mean, she messed up her last kill for gosh sakes, then this is successful. I mean, we saw her go back to her roots, and we see a lot of her in the shows. But I don't think it's that. I don't think she's the villain. She's not the master villain, right? And we haven't seen a villain. We haven't seen we have the 12 out there, and Paul and Kenny's killer, whoever that is, and Dasha, but none of them are focused. None of them have a MacGuffin that we're trying to figure out. It's just missing, and it's a really glaring hole in the whole storyline. And we've talked about it almost every episode, and I wish we didn't talk about it. I wish they saw that. I wish they listened to our podcast. But that's the biggest problem with the global story right now, is just we're kind of missing the villain. Mel, what do you got?
I was thinking about Villanelle, because she, it seems like it, she hit her lowest low much quicker than I'd expected. I suspected that she would follow this disillusionment internal story. That means something she has believed in with all her heart turns out false and knocks her off her feet. And we've seen her hit the bottom in this episode. She thought as a keeper for the 12, she could give orders. Instead, they want her to continue as an assassin. And that's what devastates Villanelle so much that she's looking for a way out. Suddenly, she wants to give it all up. She's depressed, whining on the bathroom floor. I didn't recognize Villanelle anymore. And even though they prepared this by showing that Villanelle acted differently by suddenly wanting to search for a family, I still feel like I've missed some crucial incident that led to her being like this. Maybe it was the time she had to shoot Eve, and now she's trying to cling to her old life, but she doesn't find meaning anymore. And that's what keeps her, that's why she can't get back on her feet.
That's really interesting. I realized that I thought that part of the reason she's lost her mojo was because she killed her mother. And that was when Constantine says to her in that stadium or ice hockey ring, we always want to kill our mothers, but we don't do it. And that was the biggest telling off from her handler, a former handler. That may not be obvious, and it's possible that it was just my interpretation. But I felt like, remember her attitude? So she's never behaved the way she did after a kill, as she did after killing her mother. Remember when she got on the train and she was like, she just looked slightly insane?
Yeah.
So for me, it was the killing of the mother that potentially destroyed her.
Yeah, and Constantine knows her mother, right? Because he said, she's just insane.
Right. Yes.
I was wondering about that too. Why, how Constantine knows her.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, he did say that. But again, for him to berate her about killing someone is quite unusual, because he orders a lot of kills. So that, to me, explained it.
Okay,
so my take on the global story really quickly. One of my worries from the last episode was how they were going to enable Eve and Villanelle to reconcile, given that we thought that the 12 had ordered a hit on Nico and framed Villanelle. And for me, the connection, the sort of slightly morbid, frightening dance that the two characters do is part of the attraction of the show. But it seems that Nico's alive and rejected Eve, which allows her, Eve, to potentially fall back into this love pattern with Villanelle. And so I liked that as part of the storytelling. And I thought the fact that both Eve and Villanelle ended the episode disillusioned with their jobs and lives gave me some sense of hope that the global story might have a bit of a kick to it. Because in the end, this thriller without the two of them working together isn't quite as attractive for me. But the big glaring problem, as both of you have said, is that the 12, I just don't know. I just don't see enough to make me care about the 12. How did the 12 not know that Constantine took the money? I thought they knew everything.
So, Perul, you wanted to talk about keeping it real with your characters.
Yeah, I guess, I think this was Mel's spotlight. I mean, with each of these episodes, we have an opportunity to dig a bit deeper into something that is glaringly obvious for us to talk about. And Mel, you mentioned that for you, this believability
is
a huge issue.
Okay, I had the problem with, especially with Villanelle, as I already talked about, that she was out of character, because there was just this one moment. Being a keeper doesn't mean giving orders, but it means you have to go on killing. And this throws her completely off her path or brings her out of balance. And I thought, okay, maybe they should have put some more progressive complications in her way to actually make her look for a way out. But it was just too sudden, and that's why I thought this was not believable, that Villanelle, as soon as something gets in her way, she just
gives up entirely.
Yeah, right. Because that was everything she wanted. She wanted all this season, she wanted to be a keeper. So why just now? Why should she just give up now?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the answer is that it's her mother, that she's just given up on all of this. She's lost everything. But I do take your point that it's not, there is definitely a degree of suspending, that we have to suspend belief in order to accept this episode. You know, there's not that much explanation given of how Nico managed to survive the attack.
Right.
Or why Villanelle changed her tune quite so drastically.
Yeah, and we've also seen Eve in the last couple of episodes. Either she was a mess or she was investigating, or then she was a mess again and investigating again. So think about how Eve's progressing. And what I really didn't like, on top of all of that, Irina, Constantine's daughter, she doesn't like Villanelle. Then she has one talk with Villanelle in the car. And then she follows Villanelle's advice and she hits the boyfriend of her mom with a car. But she also, after that, she runs over him and she's smiling. She's totally happy about what she just did. And I think that was completely surreal and unnecessary to show us this.
So, I mean, given that I can argue both ways, right? So I agree with you that it's definitely a sudden step up in her degree of, or her sort of foray into being slightly mad and murderous. But bear in mind that she has Constantine as a father who she knows is a bad dude, and she's being exposed to Eve, that's her Villanelle.
Well, you don't know how much she's exposed to this life because she's living with her mom and her boyfriend and...
Yeah,
I guess kidnapped by Villanelle for a certain amount of time, but
she saw she saw that entire messy episode where she was kidnapped. There was a gun. I can see that might happen, but I think what you're saying, there's one thing that definitely makes sense to me is that we haven't had enough of an explanation. It's just assumed that we will accept a degree of nuttiness of the characters.
Yeah,
that backstory hasn't been filled in properly. So how would we do this differently? Or what are the tips? I mean, Randall, Mel, both of you, have you seen writers that have done this in their writing? And what have you pointed them to?
It's about like, how can you keep your characters in character and believable throughout your story? That's like the question we want to ask. So Randy, what do you suggest?
So I think the important thing is to, you know, whether you're a planner or a pantser, you know, if you're a pantser, you're going to write your story and then you're going to kind of look back, hopefully using the story grid to help you edit it. And you're going to try to identify your character's arc, and that'll be moving from their wants to their needs. All right. And then, so when you look through, when you do your first draft re-edit, you're going to make sure that your character has, what you said, enough reason to move to their needs from their wants, and they have enough, you know, progression and reason to get there. And if you're planning this whole thing, you might want to plan the scenes that show how they're going to realize what they really want along the way, as opposed to just, you know, a cliff where they fall off and like, oh, I need this kind of thing. And then I would say map that out and keep that close by you as you're either editing your first draft or writing your first draft.
Yep. No, that's all very smart, sage advice. Awesome. So now we move to a separate, to the next section of how we might have written this differently, this episode differently. Randall.
So, I mean, it's all about we talked about the middle build being part of the villain's, you know, story. And we've talked about the lack of a villain. So I think in this one, especially since we're so deep in this middle build, we're at the end of the middle build. I assume the last two are going to be the end and payoff, or at least the last one, but maybe part of the second to last one too. I would have made the 12 more powerful all through this season. I would have put little scenes in there where people are watching and have those people show up later. I would have, we saw them as a little bit of a mystery, shadowy group that was kind of puppeteering through the world and killing people in the right places for reasons. But we don't know what those reasons are. Is it just money? If it's just money, it's not a master villain, I don't think. If they're not trying to get power, world power or political power, if it's just about money, then they're not the master villains we think they are. And I think there's a lot of pieces that could have gone into this where we build the 12 up, especially in this season. We see pieces of them. We see a shadowy a person like we had talked about in the Russian documentary episode. The 12 could have appeared in the numerous places there that would have made sense to us and would have shown how they're watching Eve, or excuse me, how they're watching Villanelle and actually show them that power, that they kind of know what's going on in the world, and then that they're not paying attention, I guess, is the thing. I just would have made the 12 more present.
Yeah. I think you're speaking for me, and I think for Perul as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to see the thriller.
Yeah. Is there anything in this particular episode? Mel, what have you got? What do you think about this?
I just wanted to say that I would like to see Eve investigating a little more, because we've just, like, for I don't know how many episodes now, we've seen Eve back in the office, and she gets presented with the clues, like with the note that was on the pitchfork, and they talk about that was Villanelle because she wants to revenge herself or whatever. But there's not much more investigating. Then we have that guy in the hallway, right, when Eve is at the vending machine. At first, when Eve was at the vending machine, I thought, oh, once again, this thing gets stuck. We have seen that 1,000 times before. But I liked what they did with it, like when she was like continuing to hit against it. But during the guy telling her some more new information, and they all did the work, and just Eve just got it. Like, here you go. That's Dasha, and she's in Barcelona. And yeah, Eve didn't have to do anything really. So right, just followed on it. And I would really like to see her investigating again. So following, she should see the connections and everything.
Yeah, I mean, you could have had her, exactly, you could have had her even stalking Dasha for a little bit, or trying to actually follow Dasha rather than just walking to the bowling alley with no apparent, I don't understand how she got there. She had to have been smart to do that. I would have given Villanelle a glimpse of into the 12. If she went to visit Helen, there could have been something, even if it was subtle, that something that didn't quite make sense, that made us think, that would make us think that Helen isn't quite as innocent looking as she seems, because they presented her as being quite nice, just like a nice employer who says, why aren't you happy with your promotion, rather than having some sort of sinister aspect to it. And I would have thought that you'd have maybe Villanelle finding out that Nico was attacked and tries to get in contact with Eve. That would have upped it. Randall, what do you think?
So they missed another, I mean, they missed a couple opportunities, but in this episode, you have Villanelle already in Helen's office. You know, where is this? You know, what city is it? You know, where is she? What does the building look like? What's the guard situation look like? Is it all, you know, under hush hush and it's invisible in another building, or is it like a compound base?
Yeah.
I mean, they had an opportunity to show how the 12 operates, and instead, she's already in the office. We don't know what security or how, you know, what she went through to get there. If she went through a Doctor Who telephone booth,
and she's thinking that
she slid down a tunnel or whatever. We don't know how she got there. We don't know what security was there. We don't know anything more about the 12. And they had a good opportunity to kind of show that, to show you how powerful the 12 might be.
Yeah,
exactly. I agree.
All right, Perul, what can we expect in the next episodes? What do you think?
Constantine's going to be on the run, isn't he? And possibly under threat from Paul. And even Villanelle, will they meet? They surely will. Randall, what do you think?
Maybe we'll see who the real villain is, hopefully. And we got 2 episodes left, so I hope so. Mel?
Yeah, I think maybe Villanelle and Eve plot against Dasha. But actually, I'm totally confused and I can't make any assumptions anymore. So... Yeah. We just keep watching, because they are going to surprise us. So what were your favorite scenes, Randy?
So, Perul, I have a request. Using your famous Villanelle Russian accent, I want you to say, it turns out I'm excellent at dung throwing.
This might be offensive to someone who's listening, but...
It turns out I'm excellent at dung throwing.
It turns out I'm excellent at dung throwing.
Perfect.
Very good.
That was, I like that brought back. That was my favorite part of the last episode too.
I'm excellent at dung throwing.
There you go. You're getting better. that or you're a Romanian vampire. The other thing I liked was Eve kind of casually not concentrating, kicking Dasha's ass in bowling. Like, she just walk up there, throw in there, get a strike, and Dasha's like, do you even know how to bowl? Are you a good bowler? But she's just getting strike after strike. Mel, what did you like?
I like the strange motherly talk between Caroline and her daughter, Geraldine, which was painfully honest, but completely in character. And I like this scene, yeah.
That was really revealing. Yeah. I like that. That is a very, I mean, they could have done that with Villanelle and her mom, something like that, you know, where they were like really honest with each other and we got some kind of insight into their relationship instead of like more questions. But I thought that was really well done. I like that scene too, Mel. What about you, Pearl?
Well, I think it took me a while to figure out what it was, but it's Villanelle's character when she meets Helen. Mm-hmm. And Helen's putting on this show for her and saying, I've been watching you for some time. And Villanelle and everybody says, are you trying to seduce me? Or something like that. Like, are you attracted to me? And she just, it's just this sort of relatively innocent trait she has where she can't help but speak the truth. And she doesn't understand human dynamics that well.
All right. Well, that wraps up our podcast for today. We hope you have a better understanding of the five commandments of storytelling and the six core questions that every editor asks. If you like the show, please leave us a rating and review and tell your writer and editor friends about us. For more information, videos, and articles on the StoryGrid, go to storygrid.com or our website, sgshowrunners.com. If you want to connect to one of the editors directly, links to our web pages are in the show notes. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week when we talk about the seventh episode, the second to last episode of Killing Eve Season 3, and it's going to be great.